Morning, Classic Rock 99.5.
Hey, 99.5. I'm looking for Big Daddy. This is Little Don Felder.
Little Don Felder, you got Big Daddy. You lucky devil. How are you, pal?
I'm doing great. It's an absolutely sterling, beautiful 70-degree blue sky Southern California day. I'm on my second cup of coffee, got both eyes wide open, and I'm ready to talk.
Well, bring a coat with you because we've got about 5 degrees right now, and you're coming into some cool temperatures, my friend. Hey, man, I'm glad I have a chance to talk to you. I'm a fan of Fingers Felder, and thank you for joining the program this morning, man. I appreciate it.
I'm glad to do it. It's wonderful of you to take the time to talk about this little symphony show we're going to do up there. I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be really exciting, really fun to play.
I was going to ask you, I know you're bringing your band in. You're going to be in a collaboration with the Sioux City Symphony Orchestra, which is a very good orchestra. Is this the first time you've ever done anything like this?
No, I actually did 22 shows in Germany with the Prague Orchestra in 29 days. We played 22 different cities in 29 days, which was a lot of moving gear and stuff for the crews, but it was magnificent. It was called Rock Meets Classics, and it was just fantastic. And I had the idea to put together all those charts and reach out to some of these other symphonies, like the Sioux City Symphony, and do it here in the States. It's just a really wonderful evening of hearing a lot of great classics that you know that I either co-wrote or recorded or toured with the Eagles for the 27 years that I was in the band. Songs like Already Gone, Take It Easy, One of These Nights, Tequila Sunrise, Seven Bridges Road, Heartache Tonight, Life in the Fast Lane, and of course Hotel California. But to do those with orchestral accompaniments with charts, they just soar. It just empowers everything. It's like the symphony wraps its arm around these classic songs and just lifts them up when they come in and start playing. It's beautiful. I had an amazing composer do the charts in Germany for me, and we're using a lot of those charts for this show coming up here. So it's going to be spectacular. It's a really great evening.
That is so cool, because we had an event that at this Orpheum Theater, where you're coming into, by the way, beautiful venue, a renovated old theater that I think you're going to enjoy very much. But we had a thing called Rockestra, where they brought in a rock and roll band, local artists, with the local orchestra. And it went over very well, and so people are really looking forward to seeing this show. We're taking a lot of calls here at this Classic Rock radio station, so we're excited to have Fingers Felder coming in and enlightening us a little bit, man. We're looking forward to it.
I'm excited to come to it, too. It really is a different experience to playing just with my band, and I have incredible musicians in my band. I have pedigrees like you've never heard before. My bass player, everybody plays top-notch pros and sings. My bass player plays with a guy named Richard Marks and another guy named Kenny Loggins. My drummer has more pedigree than I've ever seen anybody have. His name is Seth Roche. He's played with Rascal Flatts, Sheryl Crow, Little Big Town, Brad Paisley, and he was Keith Urban's road drummer, touring with Keith Urban for 6 years. I've got a great keyboardist named Rob Arthur that I stole from Peter Frampton's band. He's played with Sting and Billy Joel. Just unbelievable, impeccable credits these guys have. My guitar player is a young, on-fire kid that lives in Nashville, plays with a guy named Kid Rock, Kenny Chesney, and the queen of country music, Miss Tanya Tucker. So the band itself is vocals and musicianship is just off this world, out of this world, off the planet. And when you wrap that orchestra around them, it's a whole nother thing. It's just spectacular.
Talking with Don Felder this morning. I'm so excited to hear you. You're such a great guitar player. And I want to get to the Eagles stuff and all that stuff. But you talk about good players. You have played in your 27-year career, with guys like Richie Sambora. You've had Peter Frampton, Joe Satriani, some of the best guitar players known to mankind. And you're one of them. So and you're coming to Sioux City, Iowa, which is the affectionately called Tommy Town because we're the birthplace of Tommy Bolin. So I guess a question I would have for you, for all of us, that we have a lot of Bolin fans that listen to this station. Did you ever have a chance to run across Tommy Bolin, and what did you think of his guitar playing?
Oh, I thought he was spectacular. You know, he was a different idiom than me. I wound up learning to play everything from jazz to country to Chet Atkins to blues to rock to Led Zeppelin. I just wanted and started playing everything I could. There was no real borders for me musically. And so I loved the way Tommy played and respected him. It just wasn't my genre. It was a little too heavy for my taste. You know, I went to see Miles Davis, got in a car in Gainesville, Florida, drove all the way up to New York City to see Miles Davis play live with Tony Williams, who was drummer, was 17 years old, Herbie Hancock on keyboards, Ron Corder on bass, and Wayne Shorter on sax. And the amount of energy that Miles Davis could put in three or four notes would outweigh all the notes that Kenny G could play for decades. You know, it was just the selection and the feel and stuff. So I really got my interest in musicality in playing from jazz. Those guys have a way of expressing themselves and phrasing in a way that's just, it's a different musical approach than other styles of players. I love Tommy. I thought he was an amazing guitar player. And with all due respect, I would humble myself to actually play with him.
Oh, that would be a dream in heaven, man. I'm so happy to have you coming to our backyard. And, you know, so I want to go back. Your first guitar that you picked up, how old were you and what kind of music were you listening to at the time?
I was about 10 years old, and my favorite uncle had given me a box of cherry bombs when we were up visiting him in North Carolina, and he hid them in the trunk of my dad's car. And so my brother and I hopped out of the car as soon as we pulled in the driveway and went back and helped unload by grabbing that box of cherry bombs and hiding it from my dad because he would probably be afraid that I'd blow my hands off or something, which could have very well happened. But we would go out and, you know, grab four or five of those things and set them off and then run back in the house. And a kid that lived across the street from me saw us doing that and came over and wanted some of those cherry bombs. And I said, well, I tell you what, I'll give you a handful of these cherry bombs if you'll give me that old guitar you got up in the top of your closet. It was an acoustic guitar. I think it had two or three broken strings on it. And he ran over and got it. And I gave him the cherry bombs. And about 5 minutes later, all of those cherry bombs were gone. But I had a guitar. I was raised in very, very humble means in the Deep South on a dirt road. And we didn't have money to buy guitars or anything. So I went out and picked up soda bottles and mowed lawns to get enough money to go to the drugstore, because there wasn't a music school or music store in town in those days, and they carried black diamond guitar strings. And I would buy one string a week to replace the ones that were broken, and found a guy that lived a couple of blocks away from me that helped me string it and showed me how to tune it, and then I was off to the races. My dad had a tape recorder, reel-to-reel tape recorder, and he would borrow people's albums and play them and record them on tape so he could play them over and over and over and over. When he got tired of it, he would go borrow somebody else's record and, you know, erase over on top of it. So I started copying records over onto tape, and I'd record them at the faster speed, which was 7 3/4 inches per second. I would play them back at half speed, 3 3/4, so I could hear the notes that these guitar players, whether it was Chet Atkins or B.B. King or Albert King or whoever it was that I was trying to mimic or trying to learn from, I could hear it at half speed and hear the notes, and then I could play it and then finally speed up the tape to the proper speed and try to get up to playing it at the right speed with them. So it was all self-taught. We didn't have money for lessons. We didn't have money for guitars or guitar strings or anything. And it's really the best way to learn. As a matter of fact, children, when they're born, they don't know how to read. They don't know what the ABCs are. But they can learn to speak before, by listening, before they're able to read and write. So learning music by sight reading or being taught how to read it off the page, to me, is the long way around. You need to be able to hear it and learn how to play it. Right now, today, I can hear somebody play something on the radio, and in one or two times of listening to it, I can play it because I taught myself ear training of how to hear something and then play it. So to me, that's the best way to learn how to play music. And I started when I was about 10 years old, which is late. As a matter of fact, I got a call a short while ago from the head of Gibson Guitars, and they were at a convention down at the NAMM show in Dallas. This was probably 2 years ago. He calls me up and says, "Don, you got to hear this guy play Hotel California." I went, "Oh, geez, just what I need to hear is another guy trying to kill Hotel California." He says, no, listen to it. He had this guy play it. He just tore it up. He just burned it. Just like right up there at the top where Walsh and I would be playing that thing. And I said, he said, "You won't believe this, but he's 8 years old." I went, "You're kidding me. Put him on the phone." So he put this young kid on the phone. I said, "Are you really 8 years old?" He said, "Yeah." He had this really high voice. I said, "How did you learn to do that? Did you have a teacher?" He said, "No, I just went on YouTube and I found a video of you and Joe playing the solo at the end, and I could back it up and watch it, back it up and watch it, back it up and watch it, just like I was doing on the tape recorder." But he was doing it on YouTube, and he had nailed it note for note for note. And it was just, I was shocked that somebody that young could learn so well. So I didn't even catch his name, but it's a great way to learn by listening and watching instead of trying to read off paper.
Okay, so what was it like when you plugged in for the first time, went from the acoustic onto the electric? What was that like?
My dad bought me a pickup that went on the acoustic guitar, and my dad always wanted to be an electrical engineer. So he was always tinkering around trying to fix tube radios and replace capacitors and buying stuff that didn't work at swap meets and trying to repair it. So he found out that we had this big television in our living room. It looked like about the size of a washing machine, but it had a little 12-inch black and white screen in it, tube in it. But in the back, it had an RCA input. So he could take that cable and plug it into the back of his TV, and I could turn the volume up on the TV and use the speaker and the amplifier of the TV. So on Saturday mornings, I would sit and watch cartoons, but I wasn't able to hear the cartoon dialogue. I would sit and play music with it. It was like I was doing my own soundtrack to my Saturday morning cartoon. And that was my first time I actually heard myself play through an electric amp, was with a pickup on an old silver tone guitar.
It's fun to talk to you. We're talking with Don Felder, who's coming to the Orpheum Theater on the 12th of February. And, you know, I want to go to the Eagles here in a little bit, but my favorite Felder song is Heavy Metal. I mean, I like it loud. And how did that come about? I mean, did somebody call you and say, "Hey, we're putting together a cartoon, a fantasy cartoon, and we're looking for a soundtrack on it"? How did that whole thing come about?
Well, I wrote about somewhere between 12 and 15 songs, ideas, music beds for every Eagles record that we were making. And I put together, like for Hotel California, I put together 12 or 15 song ideas. One became Hotel California. Another one became Victim of Love. I did the same thing for The Long Run. One became Those Shoes. Another one became Disco Straggler. And this other one we had was a really powerful, harder rock track that I wanted Joe and I to be able to play on, like we had done on Hotel California. So we recorded the whole music bed, but we just got to the time where we had to get out of the studio and go on the road, and we didn't have time to finish it lyrically and sing, and we just let it go. So when I got that call to go over and look at that animated movie, on the way back, I was going, you know, I've got this track I wrote for The Long Run. Maybe I should just go back and revisit that, take some of that stuff out of that track, those guitar parts, and I'll just re-score it, and I'll write lyrics called Heavy Metal. And so it actually started out to be an Eagles song, but I think it might have been a little too heavy for the Eagles track at the time. And I got Don Henley and Timothy Schmidt to come in and sing harmony on it, on the original Heavy Metal with me. So it sort of sounded like the Eagles, and it had a lot of the guitar stuff on it that Joe and I should have played together, but it didn't work out that way.
Talking to Don Felder, let's go back to the early Eagles, because I read somewhere that you actually got the Eagles gig because you were referred by Crosby, Stills, and Nash because you were playing with those guys. You were taken over from Stephen Stills with his Martin guitar. You kind of filled in for him on the road, and they gave the gang at the Eagles, say, "You got to talk to this guy." Is that true?
Yeah, I was in a high school band when I was 14 with Stephen Stills called the Continentals, and we were together for about a year and a half, and He left and moved to California when he graduated from high school, and I put together another band and went to New York and then to Boston and out. And the guy that replaced Stephen Stills in that band in Florida was a guy named Bernie Ledden, who became one of the founding members of the Eagles. And so Bernie kept calling me when I was in Florida, New York, and Boston. What are you doing? You got to come out to the West Coast. This is where the music business is. Get out to the West Coast. So finally, I packed up everything I owned, put it in a U-Haul trailer, and drove across country to California. And the day I got there, Bernie left. So I was in California. I didn't know a single soul. And went around, found a couple of jobs here and there to, you know, pay the rent. And in the meantime, Bernie was telling the people at Geffen, David Geffen and Elliot Roberts management that was managing the Eagles and managing Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young and a bunch of other bands that I was in town looking for a gig. So I get this call for me to go play with this guy named David Blue, who was just being produced by Graham Nash. And so we went out opening for Graham, David Crosby and Nash. David Blue and I went out and would play the opening show, and I was standing on the side of the stage and just watch their show. And after about six or eight times of watching the show, I memorized the show. I knew all the songs and the chord changes and vocals and everything. So we were in Washington, D.C., and I got a call from Graham to come up to his hotel room. Bring a guitar. So I went, okay. So I go up to his hotel room. He said, David Lindley, our guitarist, is sick. We got to send him home. We need you to play with us tonight. I said, well, okay. Can we run through the stuff right here a couple of times? And so we just ran through their show, and I got a chance that I walked out and played this opening act with David Blue, and then I walked back out and played with Crosby, Nash, doing and playing a lot of Stephen Stills' parts. And the report was going back to management, and Bernie was calling me and going, hey, I hear you got a good gig, and blah, 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 blah. So then I got a call from Glenn Frey asking me to come down to play slide guitar on this song called Good Day in Hell. So I walked in, and I'd been jamming with those guys. I'd known Bernie since high school. They were still doing rent-a-car tours. They weren't doing big stadiums. They were doing little college campuses and stuff. So I went in and recorded that song and packed up an hour and a half later and went home. And I got a call the next day from Glenn asking me to join the band. So that one song really kind of lit them up. They got really excited about me joining the band. Went back in and played on Already Gone and a couple of other things, On the Border. And I think I played Cowbell on the Border or something. But we were just there trying to finish up that record and get out on the road. So the next thing I know, I'm on Don Kirshner's rock concert with the Eagles. So that's how that all came together.
And then 27 years later and 150 million albums later, you get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Congratulations. I mean, it's nice to talk to a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, and certainly deserved, man. You're a good player.
Well, thank you so very much. Come out to the show, say hello, and please come backstage afterwards, and I'll shake your hand and take the time to do this for me.
I would love to meet you, and I wish you well. Travel safe, bring a coat, and we look forward to seeing you on the 12th of February with the Sioux City Symphony Orchestra.
All right, my friend. Thank you again.
Take care, Don Felder.
Bye. Bye.
See ya.